Acts chapter 12. Good to have you here this evening. Good to see the young people that was here tonight too. All excited this evening. The youth meeting we had Sunday evening was very successful. We really liked that. Little Jacob Phillips taught. Did a magnificent job. Well, Jacob's serious about the things of the Lord. And that's really good to see. And we're hoping that that'll really blossom into something. I'm excited about that too. That could really be a big deal. I'm wanting to have a youth service eventually and let the youth do it. So we've done it years ago. I want to do that again. Acts chapter 12. And what we're going to title, we give one word titles for each chapter. We're going to title this chapter Deliverance. Because God's going to bring great deliverance in this chapter. That's the one word title for the chapter is Deliverance. Now, the sermon title back there, take men, is When Crisis Hits the Church. When crisis hits the church. No church is exempt from at times going through a crisis. Do you agree? It's just really just a matter of when. So we're going to see here in chapter 12, there's a crisis that hits the church of Jerusalem. And then we're going to bring 3 points about it. We're going to notice what they did. And we're going to bring out different points. 3 points total. Are you ready for them? Here's the outline. It's a prayer. We're going to look at prayer in crisis. Number 2, we're going to look at peace in crisis. We'll focus on Simon Peter with regard to the peace. And then last of all, power in crisis. And that's God's power. Prayer in crisis, peace, and then power in crisis. You got all that? So the message title is When Crisis Hits the Church. That's our 3 points. Let's go ahead now and look at verses 1-4 and let's ease into the points. But I got to lay a foundation for it first. So let's go ahead and look at verse 1. Now, about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex, that's to persecute, certain of the church. Now, when we're talking about the church here, we're talking about the church at Jerusalem. That's what it's referring to. And when you're talking about Herod, one of the things you got to realize about the name Herod is that's like Caesar. Or, you know, I mean, it's a title name. A lot of times you use the term Herod, you think of one person, but there are several different Herods that's mentioned. And let me go ahead and give you a little bit of information about the different Herods so you learn to separate them. When Jesus was born, the Herod was called Herod the Great. And he was the most well-known of all the Herods. He was, for sake of a better term, he was pretty much a nut. I mean, he really was. He killed his own son. I mean, it was one of the things that was said about him, it was better to be Herod's dog than Herod's son. So he was a very wicked man. And that was the Herod that tried to slay Jesus. When the wise men went into Jerusalem, they talked to Herod. He was called Herod the Great. He's also the one that gave the command to slay all the little children, 2 years old and under. That was Herod the Great. So keep remembering him. After him came Herod Antipas, and that's who Brother Mike taught on Sunday morning in Sunday school class. Herod Antipas is the one that beheaded John the Baptist. That's how you can keep them separate. He's the one that beheaded John the Baptist. The Herod here in chapter 12 is Herod Agrippa the First. It's another Herod. Herod Agrippa the First. And what he will be known for in this chapter is he killed James, the brother of John. He would be the one that killed. That's how you can remember him. Herod Agrippa the First killed James, the brother of John. Okay? Now, the next Herod we'll see that later on in the book of Acts is the one that you probably know better than any of them, I think. And that's Herod Agrippa the Second. And he's the one that told the Apostle Paul, almost, thou persuadest me to be a Christian. So that's how you see the 4 different Herods. So the Herod in our text is Herod Agrippa the First. And he was a people pleaser. That's what he was. And he stretched forth his hand to vex certain of the church. And the reason why he did that is to please the Jews. He was over that particular area as governor, and he would do what he could to please the Jews. And to persecute the church would have pleased the Jews because they didn't like the Christians. They didn't like the Christians, especially since they started, recognizing Gentiles as brothers in Christ. They would have hated them and considered them non-Jews for what they were doing. Okay. All right. Now, verse 2 tells us what he did. We see the title names and it mentions that he killed James, the brother of John. Now, you got to keep your Jameses straight, too. Now, this James is it identifies which one he is. He's the brother of John. Now, when you read of the 12 apostles, there was also a kind of inner circle of the 12. Did you realize that? And that was Peter, James, and John. And on occasions, you can read about there in the Gospels. For example, when Jesus went up to the Mount of Transfiguration and he let his glory shine through. I love that. And, he let his glory shine through. I love to preach on that, too, by the way. Then he took Peter, James, and John up there to see that. They got to be a witness of that. You remember when Jairus' daughter, the man that was over the synagogue, and whenever his daughter died and Jesus went in, he said she was not dead, but she sleepeth. And they made fun of him. And then he put them all out and he brought in with him Peter, James, and John. Now, the night before he was crucified, he went into the Garden of Gethsemane and brought three guys with him to pray with him. Remember who they were? Peter, James, and John. So this was that kind of inner circle of the 12 that they got to see a little bit extra that the others didn't get to see. And what he does is he kills Herod Agrippa here. The first, he kills James, the brother of John. Now, he kills him with a sword. And that's, we think of the Romans crucifying, but they also beheaded with the sword. It's just a tradition. It may be true, but that the Apostle Paul was beheaded with the sword. So that's a lot of times the Romans only crucified, but they also had chopped your head off with a sword. So that's what happened to James. Now, if you look down at the verse 17 of this chapter, Acts 12 and verse 17, it mentions another James, and he said, go show these things unto James. Do you see that in verse 17? Now, that's obvious not the James of verse 2, is it? Because he's already killed. Now, this is James, the half-brother. James, the half-brother of Jesus. You read in your Bible, the book of James. This is the writer, most think. This is the writer of the book of James. Also, he's probably the pastor of the Church of Jerusalem. When you go to Acts chapter 15, he has a prominent position in the Church of Jerusalem. Most think that that James, the half brother of Jesus, was the pastor of the Church of Jerusalem. So he has a very prominent position. Now remember, Jesus' brothers didn't believe on him there for a while. But now you can see that they became believers in him and served him. Jude, why we say they're his half brothers? Jesus was virgin born. Jesus was virgin born. He wasn't literally the son of Joseph, whereas these brothers were. Okay, let's go back to our text. So you can see the crisis. Would it be a crisis for the church? Yeah, it would be. You can imagine someone coming in and taking one of your chief members and then beheading them. You imagine that happening in Bancroft? I mean, we would consider that a crisis, wouldn't we? I mean, that would be a trying time for the church. And on top of that now, verse 3 says, when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to take Peter also. So on top of taking James now he arrests Peter. Now, you talk about prominent members in the Church of Jerusalem. These men were apostles. These were the eyewitnesses of Jesus' teaching and of his resurrection. So now not only do they kill James, but he takes Simon Peter and he arrests him with the intent of killing him also. Now, you'll notice it says these were the days of unleavened bread. Now, if you go back in the Old Testament scriptures, of course, this happens around our late March or April. But in the Jewish months, it happens, of course, I think if I remember the Nisan, and the month of Nisan in the month of Abib, if I remember right. These were the two. They had the Jews had a religious calendar, and they had just a regular calendar. So they went by two different calendars. But in the religious calendar, you would have, on the 14th of Nisan, you would have the Passover. You know, when Jesus went in the upper room and took the Passover. The next day was unleavened bread. It began what was called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. What they would do is they'd put all the leaven out of their houses. And they ate unleavened bread for 7 days. That's why it's called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It was in association with Passover. Everybody got me? So the 14th Passover, the following day after the Passover is Feast of Unleavened Bread. That happened on the 15th. And then on the 16th, you had the Feast of First Fruits. Everybody got those? 14th, 15th, and 16th. 16th was First Fruits. And they'd take a sheaf from the barley harvest and wave it. It's a picture of the resurrection. I'm going to preach on it if I live to Easter. I'm going to preach on it. Oh, it's the beautifulest picture in the world to go back and look at all the pictures. Then you had First Fruits. And you count from First Fruits 50 days. And you come to Pentecost. And Pentecost is a picture of our resurrection. Show you all that later, but boy, I tell you, it's pretty pictures. So this is it. So we know from this is springtime. This is around the time Jesus was crucified. Same time of year. So they're persecuting God's people. Peter's arrested. So it's a crisis, isn't it? I mean, if you went to the church in Jerusalem and they beheaded James, one of the inner circle, and then they arrested Peter, and then they intend to kill him as soon as Passover's over, or after unleavened bread is over, then you would consider that a crisis. Okay? Now look at verse 4. And when they had apprehended him, they put him in prison. And they delivered him to four quadrant. A quadrant of soldiers is a total of 16. A quadrant is 4. He put 16 soldiers in charge of Simon Peter. And they would do that in shifts. When you notice how they divided them up, they probably did that in shifts of 4. I'd say is what they did. But they had. Now, the reason why they put such a strong guard, why do you think they put such a strong guard on him? You'll remember earlier in the book, they arrested Simon Peter the second time, and an angel came and led him out of prison, told him to go down to the temple and preach. This time they put a guard on him. They don't only put him in prison, they chain him up. They chain him up, probably chain the two soldiers, and then they have soldiers outside the door. Then they got an iron gate to go out in the city, and they got soldiers there. They're going to make sure he don't get away. So that's their intent. So it was a crisis time for the church. Okay, everybody see it? Now it says, and I'm going to mention this, but I'm not going to lay on it. I just want to mention this. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison, four quadrants of soldiers, to keep him intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. The word Easter is a horrible translation right here. That's a horrible translation. That's not in the original at all. And that word, and let me go ahead and give it to you. And I don't know why they did that. But they did. The translators did that. But let me see if I wrote the right number down for you so you'll have it. I don't think I did. Let me see here. Nope, I didn't write it down. But it's like 28 times. It's either 28 or 29 times. I can't remember the exact number. It's translated Passover. 28 out of 29 times. So what should it have been here? Should have been Passover. My favorite translation is the King James translation. I love it. I like it. Everybody got me? Are you still with me? Now, I want you to listen real tight what I'm about to say. When we talk about verbal inspiration, and when we talk about that the Scriptures are infallible, without error, that's the original Greek and Hebrew manuscripts. This is a translation. Everybody got me? This is a great translation, but it's a translation. The word Easter is a horrible translation out here. That's clearly an error. It should be Passover. It's twice quoted like that 28 other times. It should be like that here. I don't enter into all these debates over translation debates. Clearly, some translations are not real good. King James is my favorite. But when we're talking about inerrancy, we're talking about the original Greek and Hebrew manuscripts. Okay? Because there's some problems with every translation. All God's people say it. Now, you still on that a while. And I'm sure to hear that from somebody over the internet, but I'm telling you, that's the truth. That's the truth. So the idea of that is the Passover, after the Passover. Look it up. If you got Esau, look it up on there. Look it up in your Greek dictionary. Look it up in your concordance. It's Passover every time, not Easter. All right. Now, how would they handle this crisis? What did they do? Verse 5. Notice what the church did. It said, Peter, therefore, was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. Now, how did the church respond to the crisis? What did they do? They prayed. Is that the first response to any crisis? It should be for God's feet. That should be the first thing that you do as you get along with the Lord. First thing shouldn't be to call me or to call a deacon. The first thing you need to do is get in touch. If you're saved, you get in touch with your Savior first thing. You go to Him. Because that's where your main help's going to come from anyhow. Then you can call me so we all can pray along with you. We want to know about it so we can pray too. But if you're born again, you go to the Lord. You get along with Jesus and you pour your heart out unto Him. And that's what you see here. That's the first thing they do. They pray. Now, we're going to get more into the prayer part a little bit later because there's people praying online, it looks like, in their houses. Matter of fact, Peter's going to show up at a doorstep here in a little bit, and the people's been in there praying, and it shocks them. That while they're praying, and they've been praying for his deliverance, he's standing out there knocking on their door. Isn't that amazing? And it shocks them. It really does. But that's the first thing I want you to see is when a crisis comes, the first recourse you have, if you're saved, is you go to your king. You go right to him. He bid you come on. Let's go to Philippians 4. Philippians chapter 4. That's what it says, verse 6. Be careful for nothing. What's be careful for nothing mean? It means don't be anxious or don't worry is the idea of it. You know, the Bible regards worry as a sin. Yet it's the most commonly acceptable sin that we commit. Do you worry? Do I worry? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I get ate up with the God of worry sometimes. It's a sinful God, isn't it? It takes advantage of you. It takes over your mind. Worry is anxiety. It comes from the word anxiety. Sometimes it's translated anxiety. What is anxiety? It's fear. It's the fear of what may happen. That's what it is. The fear of what possibly could happen. And you can get, for sake of a better term, you can get ate up with that. You ever get ate up with worry? What is, when you get filled with care, is it, when you're careful for nothing, when you get filled with anxiety, it just, that's all you can think about. It takes over your mind, takes your joy, doesn't it? You ever seen a happy warrior? You ever seen a warrior praising? You ever seen a warrior at peace? You don't have none of that. It don't, and worry is needless, but I tell you, I hate it, but it gets a grip on me too. Worry about things. Worry about people. People worry me to death. I'll just be honest, my biggest problem is people. I don't guess if you had any people, you'd worry, would you? I worry about people. Well, I can't worry about that. I mean, it makes you sick after a while. It takes your joy, robs you of your service, does all those things. So I have to constantly deal with that every day of my life. I'll get to worry about somebody. And I'll say, well, now, what's that going to do? And instead of drawing my energy away doing that, I go to the King with it. I go right to Jesus with it. I say, here's what I'm worried about, Lord. And here, you take it. I can't handle this. I'm tired of worrying about it. And He wants you to do that to start with, though. Worry will make you sick if you keep doing it long enough. Make you nervous. Rob you of your sleep. Take your mind over. Take your joy. It'll eat your lunch, I'm telling you. You get rid of it. So instead of worrying, that's what he says in verse 6, in everything. Everybody say everything. Everything. Everybody see it? Yes, everybody do that together. Everything. Everything. See, just not everything. You say, well, this is a big one. I'm going to take it to the Lord. They're all big. Take it all to Him. Everything. By prayer and supplication. Now, remember, I always warn you about this. It says when you're going to Him with your worry, to do it with what? What's it say? Do it with thanksgiving. Because even though you're worried about something, if you do it with thanksgiving, you'll see that you've still got all kinds of things to be thankful for. And what it does is it gets your focus off the worry onto other things. All God's people said. You see what I mean? So He says, just don't come and tell me about it. You come and tell me about it, but you do it with thanksgiving. Because when you're worried, that's all your mind's focused on. But when you get to thanking the Lord for what He's done for you, it raises your focus up. So, with prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. So you go to Him in prayer. And verse 7, the result of that will be the peace of God. When you truly leave something to the Lord, you'll receive something called the peace of God. And it passes understanding. Will keep your heart and mind. The peace of God, which passes understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. So God immediately will provide you grace. It's always His will to give you grace, isn't it? He'll give you strength and grace. For what the Lord don't deliver from, He will provide grace for. I hope you got what I just said. For what the Lord don't deliver from, He'll provide you ample grace for. Okay. All right, so they prayed. Now let's go back to our text and let's go to the next point. So how they handled their crisis of, this church has went through a lot. Back in Acts 8, they had a lot of their people scattered. Remember? They had one of their main deacons, Stephen, had been stoned to death. This church had went through a lot. I mean, this was a persecuted church. So they needed to learn to deal with crisis. We need to learn to deal with crisis because churches face them. All of them do. It's not a matter of if. It's just a matter of when. Okay. Now, let's notice peace in crisis. I want to show you this real fast. I like this. I really like this today when I seen it. Turn to Acts chapter 12. Now, Simon Peter's arrested here in chapter 12. And I want you to notice at verse 6. And when Herod would have brought him forth, the same night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains. So he's sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and the keepers were before the door, which kept the prison. Now, I titled this Peace in Crisis. You say, well, how'd you get that out of that? He's sleeping. I couldn't sleep. They just killed my buddy. I'm not laying in a bed. I'm chained to two soldiers. And I'm in a prison. And the next day, unless something happens, they're going to kill me too. My eyes would have been this big around. Surely they didn't give him a sedative. How in the world could he sleep? How could he have so much peace that he could actually lay down and sleep? Well, I think Simon Peter trusted. I think he just trusted the Lord. Doesn't that sound real simple? I just think he knew the Lord was in control. And I think he just put all of his trust in. I think that's what he did. That's a cure for things, isn't it? Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. And lean not to your... Because there's a lot of things that I don't understand. I don't have the answer for it because God don't give it to me. And when we don't understand something, what the Lord wants us to do is what? Trust Him. Because once we get all the information, then we'll understand. But until we get there, the way of peace is by doing what again? Trusting Him. Isaiah chapter 26 says this, verse 3 and 4. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. Trust ye in the Lord Jehovah, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. Let's see. So what I think that's what he did. Now, I don't know how old he was, but if you'll remember in John 21:18, I don't know if this has anything to do with why he was so comfortable. God give him peace here. But he had a promise that he would live to be to an old man. Y'all remember? In John 21, he said, when you are old, they'll take you where you would not go and strap you. Talking about he would be crucified, probably, in a later time. But he would live to be to a old age. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, I'm still a young man yet. And Jesus said, I'm going to die till I was old, so I just will go to sleep. Rest. But he had peace in crisis. I mean, does that surprise you here? It does me. I thought, man, how could he be sleeping? I've been up nights over a whole lot less than thinking that's going to take my head off the next morning. He had peace in a crisis. And I think that's when you put your trust in the Lord and you realize he's in control and he's in charge of the situation and has a purpose for things. You remember he's with you. Gives you peace. One of our statements of strength is God is in control even when things look out of control. God is in control even when things is out of control. And I think Peter had that down in his heart. So he just slept. I don't know if his arms was up. The old fisherman just sat there and slept. Comfortable. He knew that. He just knew God had it. And you know what? When you know God's got it, he gives you peace. When you really know God's got it, he gives you peace. Okay? All right, let's read on. Now, let's go ahead and look. Let's go ahead and read. Let's see. Begin at verse 7. Now we're going to see power in crisis. This is our third point, and we're going to start to see that in verse 7. Power in crisis. We've seen prayer in crisis. We've seen peace in crisis. Now let's look at power. I thought this was awesome. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter on the side. Now what the Lord does is he dispatches one angel. Go on down there and get Simon Peter out of prison. He done did it before, but this time they have a watch. This time, what did Herod do? He set a watch this time. He used chains. Got 16 guards there. He ain't getting out. Well, that wasn't no problem for the Lord. You see, power in crisis. God's power in crisis. You see it? So he smokes Peter on the side and his chains falls off. Y'all know that one song, entitled Amazing Grace, a new remake of it. Says, my chains fell off. I've been set free. My God, my Savior hath ransomed me. And like a flood, his mercy reigns. Unending love. Amazing grace. So it's, chains fall off. See, you were chained before you were saved to sin, wasn't you? Sin, debt. You saved your soul, your chains, you're free. Redeemed. That's a good little picture of it there. So his chains falls off. And the angel said to him, gird yourself, bind your sandals on. So he did, and he saith, cast your garment about you and follow me. And he went out and he followed him and wist not that it was true what was done by the angel, and thought he saw a vision. So he thinks he's seen a vision because he's seen visions before when the Lord showed him things. If you'll remember to Cornelius. When they were past the first and the second ward, they came into an iron gate that leads into the city, which opened to them of its own accord. Now, you know, next time you walk in Walmart and you step on that little thing and that door goes, flops open, you think about that. It was the first one right there. First time that happened right here. Here's what happened. They come up to that gate because that would have been an obstacle too. And it just opens up. Does this seem like it's any, does this crisis seem like it's any problem before the Lord? No, it wasn't. The chains fell off. He leads him right out of prison. He said, the angel said, just come on with me. And if Simon Peter's following along behind him, they come to the big iron gate. What does the big iron gate do? It just swings open. It opens up. God overcomes every obstacle that was in the way. I want you to know that this situation looked hopeless the way man looks at it. But our God is able to do exceedingly abundantly what we ask or even think. And you pray that way. You pray that way. All right, let's read on now. Let's go ahead and start to wrap this up. So the gate swings open, verse 11. And when Peter was come to himself, he said, now I know of a surety that the Lord has sent his angel and delivered me out of the hand of Herod from all the expectations of the people, the Jews. And when he considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. Now, later on, you're going to see Paul and Barnabas go out, and they're going to take a young man with him, and this is the young man. This is John Mark. Remember, they go out, and then he comes back. He don't continue on. But this is the young man, Christian young man. Now, what were they doing there in verse 12? Praying. They were in their house praying. Probably late at night, and they're up praying. Folks, you need to have a praying church. If you ain't got a praying church, you don't have much. You got to have people pray. Pray for souls. Pray for people to be healed, touched. Pray for the Lord to be edified and lifted up. Oh, what can I do, Jeff? Pray. Get you a list and pray. Pour your heart out to the Lord every day and pray. Pray. Okay. So they were praying. And as Peter, this is humorous when you read it. As Peter knocked at the door of the gate, the damsel came, whose name was Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness. So here he's knocking at the door, and she gets so happy she don't open up and let him in. She leaves Simon Peter standing outside the door. She's excited. I mean, they're in there praying. I mean, that's like praying for rain and bringing an umbrella, isn't it? I mean, they're praying, but at the same time, Peter's standing at the door. But boy, when they see him out there, they're shocked at it. Have you ever prayed for something and the Lord answered, and you're shocked that it came to pass? He is able. Let's go ahead, verse 15. And they said to her, thou art mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even as so. And they said, it is his angel. But Peter continued knocking. And when they had opened the door, they were what? They were astonished. So, you see the power in the crisis? Whose power? God's. Here's a hopeless looking situation. And God delivered right out of it. And sometimes that's what he does. That helps us when we pray, doesn't it? Now, can I ask the question? Why didn't he deliver James? He didn't deliver James, did he? Both were apostles. He didn't deliver James. James was probably beheaded with the sword. I assume that's what they done. It's usually what the Romans did when they killed someone. James was killed and Peter was delivered. God did deliver James, folks. God either delivers from death, which is what he did for Simon Peter, or he delivers through death. Do you agree? Amen. Either from death or through death. Now, are you still with me? Let me ask that question. Which one you think is better? Well, absolutely through death would be better because, my, James went off to be with the Lord. And they would be, much less be, he wasn't in prison with this body anymore. His spirit was made perfect the moment that he died. He went to paradise the moment that he passed on. One of them days, Simon Peter was going to join him later. But he did deliver him. Because we'll look at this message and we'll say, oh, poor old James. Well, he went off to be with Jesus. Yeah, he's actually better off than Peter. You see, God had more work for Peter. There's still some job for him to do. James' time had come to an end. And the Lord allowed him to be delivered up. Was God still in charge of that situation too? Well, yeah, he was still sovereign over that. And you got to remember too, when they beat the apostles earlier in the book, you remember when they left the presence of the council, they rejoiced that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his namesake. They considered it the highest form of honor to die in the cause of Christ. That's the way they lived, folks. They were a different breed of people. They were flesh and blood just like us. But man, they had a great love for the Lord, and they sacrificed so much for his cause. How they were. All God's people said. Well, folks, we're going to stop. We'll go ahead and stop there tonight. Hope this has been a blessing to you. When crisis hits the church, I showed you 3 points. I showed you they prayed. I showed you that in a crisis you can have peace, can't you? Peter did. He slept because he trusted the Lord. And I showed you God's power, able to do above what you ask or think. Let's all stand.